I got a couple of things. First is a distribution of GNU Linux called Ubuntu that has on it what is called the GNOME desktop, which is the way you interface with it. It's a GUI, which a lot of people may not associate with Linux if they've heard of it at all from way back, especially. The GUI have come a long way since then, especially with accessibility. And there are two that I like. The one I brought today is GNOME. I have another distribution of Linux that has a desktop called Mate. That's very simple, but I'll bring that another time, perhaps. So I'm going to show you also a little bit about the Orca screen reader, which is the screen reader that people use for GUI type access. So you'll find that GNOME is kind of like OS X's interface, or maybe some of the later Windows is, in the way it operates. I'm on a laptop. It's an HP ProBook something. 8 gigs of RAM, quad core. Pretty beefy.
What are you demonstrating?
It's a version of Linux with a couple of applications I'm going to show. A version of GNU Linux, or just Linux if you prefer, for purposes. It is called Ubuntu. U-B-U-N-T-U. Ubuntu.com is the website for getting downloads. And the screen reader on which I'm going to work is called Orca, O-R-C-A. It is included in Ubuntu and a couple of other Linux distributions. Now, since it's all modular and can be customized in all kinds of different ways, there are different people make, different groups or companies, in the case of Canonical, which is Ubuntu, make distributions as prepackaged set of applications and layouts, appealing to different sort of constituencies. Ones that have GNOME, the desktop, and Ubuntu in particular, are sort of consumer-oriented, although they also are office workstations in places. Where other distributions are a lot less so. I've got another one on another machine that uses a very simple desktop and mostly command lines, and that's for a different set of people prefer those. This GNOME and Orca are actually sitting on top of that command line setup. It's just that if you use GNOME, you don't have to learn all that stuff. So it'll be like using Windows or something. And by the way, this is all free, both as in cost to the user and for sharing it. You have freedom to copy it, share it, modify it, whatever you want, which is the other freedom that's even more important maybe than it being gratis. You know, anybody can jump in there and start coding or documenting or doing artwork or whatever and submitting it for integration into the community. And that even includes LibreOffice, which is the Office suite, roughly equivalent to Microsoft Office. I also have on here a game that I'm going to show you, but I'm going to go a quick tour of Orca's setup. So we're going to do caps lock space to get to the setup dialog.
Right. References, general page, top.
Okay, I'm going to slow it down.
Voice page,
so I go over here to voice.
Now, David, this sounds like the speech in it. It's similar to the speech in NVDA.
It actually is eSpeak.
It is eSpeak, okay.
It is eSpeak, which is a free open source screen reader. I mean, voice.
77, 76, 75.
There we go. And then I'll do Alt-O to approve that rather than going through the rest of it. Or I can just give you a quick buzz through the rest of it. I'm in the voice setup. I jumped quickly to the rate setting, so I wanted to lower that first. That should be first in the dialogue, I think. But here we go. I'll go back, Shift-Tab.
Capitalization style, combo box.
Capitalization style, if I were to choose that, I could say, do I want it to raise the pitch on capital letters? Do I want it to say the word cap? Do I want it to separate words that are mixed case, which is the default kind of behavior, which I like. So if you set it to none, it does what it, you know, it's just a basic style, a capitalization indicator.
Person, default voice, and combo box.
That's the default voice in English.
Speech synthesizer, default synthesizer, combo box.
Default synthesizer is eSpeak, because it's all I've got on here.
Can you put Eloquence, David, on that?
That's IBM TTS.
Okay.
It's the old Voxen. I think it's an old Eloquence, but its license is kind of iffy and...
Speech dispatcher,
that's the middleware between the synthesizer and Orca.
Voice type, default combo box.
And default voice, I could change it to different, I could have link voice, I could have a different voice for certain dialogues, a different, or even per application if I wanted to.
Voice page, tab.
That's the voice page. I go back
general
to
page, tab.
General has...
Keyboard layout panel, laptop, selected radio button, progress bar updates panel, speak updates checkbox checked, braille updates checkbox off checked, beep updates checkbox off checked, frequency sets, 10 selected trim button, restrict to application combo box, mass panel, present tooltips checkbox off checked, speak object under mass check, time and date format, 05/11/all panel, enable structural and announce lock, where announce forms in sale, checkbox checked, announce and maps in sale, announce lists in sale, checkbox, announce panels in sale, announce tables in sale, checkbox, sale by, sentence, profiles panel, apt load push button, save as push, remove push button, startup profile, help push button, apply pusher, cancel push button.
Okay, that's
general. Page, tap.
That's general.
Voice
we did
page,
voice.
Page, tap.
Speech, you can play with the verbosity and a few other things.
Enable speech checkbox checked. verbosity panel, verbose, selected radio button, punctuation level panel, most, selected radio button, token context panel, only speak display text checkbox off checked, speak blank lines checkbox checked, speak indentation and justification checkbox off checked.
That's very handy. If you're proofreading, you turn that on, obviously, especially if you're doing code.
Speak blank lines checkbox checked.
Speak blank lines is what it says it is.
Speak indentation and justification checkbox off checked.
Speak indentation and justification. That's, it shows your formatting.
Speak misspelled word indicator checkbox checked.
Speak misspelled word indicator. It'll say misspelled as you're typing, for example, into a website or an office document.
Speak object mnemonics checkbox not checked.
And I'll skip some of these because they're not really.
Speak child speak to speak this system must speak colors as name announce locked words during navigation checkbox checked. Speak colors as names checkbox checked.
Speak colors as names. If it's coded properly, it'll say the name of the color versus the hex codes for RGB.
Announce block quotes during navigation checkbox checked.
Announce block quotes, those are handy in websites. You gotta know where things are quoted. It tells you, it'll say quote and end quote.
Announce forms during navigation checkbox checked.
Announce forms, same thing. You gotta know when you can enter text or play with a control.
Announce landmarks during navigation checkbox checked.
Announce aria landmarks.
Announce lists during navigation checkbox
announce
checked.
Announce lists.
Announce panels during navigation checkbox checked.
Announce panels.
Announce tables during
announce
navigation
tables.
Speak full row in checkbox checked. Speak full row in documents.
Speak
tables,
full row in tables.
Checkbox off checked.
Speak full row in spreadsheets is not checked. You don't want to do that. You want to go by cell.
Help push button. Apply push cancel. But okay push button. Speech page tab. Braille page tab.
Braille we have.
Enable Braille support checkbox not checked.
Enable Braille not checked because I don't have a display, although an Orbit 20 and a bunch of others will actually work.
Display settings panel. Disable end of line symbol checkbox not checked.
And disable end of line. Well, this is Braille is turned off, so none of these would actually do anything, but I'll just quickly.
Abbreviated role names checkbox not checked.
Abbreviated role names.
Enable word wrap checkbox not
enable
checked.
Word wrap.
Enable contracted Braille checkbox
enable
checked.
Contracted Braille.
Contraction table. US English grade 1 combo box.
It's set for grade 1 right now, English.
Flash message settings panel. Enable flash messages checkbox checked.
Flash to settings. That I think that pops up .7 on attention and messages to get your attention, I think. I don't know how exactly that works. Probably depends on the display.
Messages are detailed checkbox checked.
Messages are detailed.
Messages are persistent checkbox not checked.
Messages are persistent. That's good that that's not checked. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to work. It would sit there forever.
Message duration set. Five selected.
Message duration, 5 seconds. And you can adjust it. It's a spin control. You could go up and down.
Repositive panel. Repose. Six selection. Hyperlink help. Put a black pusher. Cancel. Put OK pusher. Braille page. Tap. Key echo page. Tap.
Key echo.
Enable key echo checkbox checked.
Enable key echo. And then you have the various echo options. They're not mutually exclusive. You can have.
Enable alphabetic keys checkbox
alphabetic.
Checked.
Alphabetic.
Enable numeric keys checkbox numeric. Checked. Enable punctuation keys checkbox checked.
Punctuation.
Enable space checkbox checked.
Space.
Enable modify keys checkbox not checked.
Modifiers not checked.
Enable function keys checkbox
function
not checked.
Keys not
enable
checked.
Function keys checkbox not checked.
Action keys not
enable
checked.
Navigation keys checkbox not checked.
Navigation not checked. Otherwise it would say left, right, tab, up, down, and all that junk.
Enable non-spacing diacritical keys checkbox not
enable
checked.
Non-spacing diacritical. I think that mainly applies to languages like, well, other than English. We don't use them.
Enable echo bar character. Enable echo. Enable help. Apply push button. Cancel push. OK push. Key echo page. Key bindings page tab.
Key bindings. You can set shortcuts. You can define. You could redefine this whole interface if you wanted to.
Pronunciation page tab. Text attributes page tab.
Text attributes. That's where it would.
Text attributes panel. Table with 36 rows, 4 columns. Size. Speak. Checkbox checked. Mark in Braille. Checkbox checked.
Yeah. This is size and mark it in Braille.
Family name. Speak. Checkbox checked. Mark in Braille. Checkbox checked.
Family name. I'm just going down the column because I didn't change the setting for it. It reads the whole row. I could have gone back in verbosity and changed it.
Wait. Speak. Checkbox checked. Mark in Braille. Checkbox checked. 400.
And that's font. That's weighting of.
Event. Speak. Checkbox checked. Mark in Braille. Checkbox checked. Zero.
Okay. So there's a whole bunch of these. And you can have all these attributes spoken or none, depending on what you need. And as I said, you could do it per application. If you wanted to have it for Office, do all this, and some other do none of it, you could do that. I could see for proofreading purposes, you might need it all.
Reset push button.
So,
adjust selected attributes panel. Move up one
reset,
push button.
Down
one push button.
Down.
Push Braille indicator. Help push button. Apply push button. Cancel push button. Okay push button. Face. Screen reader settings.
And we'll say
reloaded.
Okay on that.
Server
and
driver push button.
We reloaded the settings. We're not connected, so it said server can't be found. We're going to go to the top bar of the GNOME desktop this time with Control-Alt-Tab.
Window. Top bar push button. Window. Activities. Toggle button. Not pressed.
And we're going to move across. That's the leftmost button. It shows an overview of all the apps that are running. If I press that, we'll go to the right.
Firefox web browser menu.
Firefox web browser happens to be where it's focused. The menu just has on it. I go down.
Server not found. Mozilla Firefox.
It doesn't have anything because the Firefox has its own menu. It's not attached.
Open a new window.
To the
server not found. Mozilla Firefox. Right. Drag and push button.
I'm going to go back
a.
to the
window. Top bar push button.
Top
window.
Bar.
Firefox May 11, 13, 41. Accessibility
that's
menu.
The date. Accessibility menu. Here's where you can turn on various things.
High contrast check menu item not checked.
High contrast is not checked.
Zoom check menu item not checked.
Zoom is not checked. That's the inbuilt magnifier.
Large text check menu item not checked.
Large text, I'm not sure how that differs from Zoom. Maybe it's not variable like Zoom is.
Screen reader check, menu item checked.
Screen reader checked, because it comes on with the with the GNOME desktop.
Screen keyboard check, menu item not checked.
Screen keyboard is not checked. That's a virtual keyboard on the screen that you can point to it. For people with dexterity problems and can't use a keyboard.
Visual alerts check, menu item not checked.
Visual alerts, I'm not sure what that does exactly when it's checked.
Sticky keys check, menu item not checked.
Sticky keys, that's like things like Shift, Alt, and Control. If you have sticky keys checked, you have to tap it again to release. You tap it once to hold it and again to release it. That, you can use that if you have to type one-handed, for example.
Slow keys check, menu item not checked.
And slow keys, that if you check that, the keys wait a long time to bounce if they're held.
Bounce keys check, menu item not checked.
Bounce keys is not checked also.
Mouse keys check, menu item not checked.
Mouse keys, that's where you can use the... It's kind of redundant. You can use the keyboard to emulate the mouse, but you can do that with Orca, whether this is checked or not.
Mouse keys, slow keys, stick, visual, three, three, large text, check, zoom, check, menu, hack, zoom, check, hack, contrast, check,
menu, I'll go back up here. That's the accessibility menu.
Window, system menu.
Next is the system menu, where we moved... I moved to the right on the top bar of the GNOME display, and I have...
Volume start of 0.8.
Volumes has it has increments 1 to 10.
0.0.0.5, 0.0.0.8.
We'll leave it on 8.
Brightness is 0.3.
Brightness is 0.3. You can keep it as low as 0.1. Supposedly you can turn it completely off, but I keep it on 1 or 3.
Wi-Fi not connected. Collapsed.
Wi-Fi is not connected.
On. Collapsed.
Bluetooth is it's on.
11:31 remaining, 98%. Collapsed.
11:31 battery time. 11
wow.
hours.
Wow.
Yeah, very nice.
Tape hunt. Collapsed. 11:31 remit on. Wi-Fi brightness volume start of 0 brightness Wi-Fi not connected.
So let's turn the Wi-Fi on. I'm going to go to the right.
Empty-handed. Select network.
I hit the select network button. I hit enter.
Window. Select a network. Cancel push button.
And now I can tab around these all these networks. MIT is the one we want. I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. See if there's like an MIT guest.
MIT.
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 I might have to reboot actually if this doesn't.
Okay, so here's a good question.
Here's a good question.
Yes.
This is the GNOME desktop's Wi-Fi gadget, which sometimes does not work accessibly.
So rebooting, now, what's the process? What's the equivalent of Control-Alt-Delete?
Hit the power button in my case, because that's what I set it up for.
Good, okay.
Yeah, 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 and it won't take that long. I could try restarting Orca. Let me do Orca Replace.
O-R-C-A-S-H-R-E-P-A-T.
This is a problem with GNOME's thing. It sometimes it won't grab the focus for screen reader purposes. I don't know why. But it locks up the whole... All right, I'm going to reboot. But I'm going to shut the power off. And the power is shut off. This is all... This is an SSD, so there's no, like, spin down of the drive or anything. You just have to... Now I'll turn the power back on. We wait about 30 seconds, maybe. And I'll log in.
And the log-on screen, is that fail accessible?
Yeah. The log-on screen... All right, there's a login screen. I'll just throw my password in there. I'll just throw my password in there. And we did that. There's our screen reader. I notice a little bit of crackle when it comes up. It goes away. The little crackle goes away. This is a bug that's in part of the middleware for speech dispatcher. Okay, Firefox. One thing I can show you that's kind of cool about GNOME that other desktops don't have. I don't have to actually know the name of certain applications to find them. I can just hit the super key or the Windows key. And if I were to type, for example, I would have typed the string web, there'll be other options that come up. Firefox will be the first one. Web is the second one, that's another browser. Cheese is a webcam application that comes with GNOME. LibreOffice Impress, that's a PowerPoint-style program for presentations. And those all come up when I type the word web into the thing. It reminds me a bit of Spotlight on OS X, how you just type the name of something and it automatically searches for it.
What do they call it? I don't know. It'd be Windows on Windows keyboard.
It's the super key, super key or Windows key. Key. Same thing. We call it the super key. It's the Windows key on the keyboard. And that's Firefox. It's Firefox 66. Okay, we've got to get rid of that crackle. Okay, crackle, level out. Get rid of that. There we go. The crackles is gone, but I got to turn the volume back up because it went back to my previous setting. Okay, top bar. So we do Alt-Control-Tab. We go to the system menu. Bump the volume back up. Brightness is back up to 1. I don't care right now. I would normally... put that right away down. I'll just go
0.0, 0.1.
There. I'll leave it there.
Wi-Fi not connected. Collapse.
Let's try this one more time. I swear it'll work one of these times. No.
Select network.
Select network.
Window. Select a network. Cancel push button. MIT.
Hit it. Well, we'll try again in a moment. We got MIT this time, and it didn't lose focus. So now I'll just hit the refresh. I'll just do Control R to reload. All right, there's Firefox. Now, there's a bunch of settings that are unique to Firefox. I could briefly show you some of that. I'm not going to show Firefox itself because Mozilla's Mozilla, no matter what platform it's on. So I'm not going to spend time showing Firefox. But I'll just show some of the unique settings, the ones that are unique to Firefox.
Terrain reader preferences for Firefox, general page tab.
Now I'm going to do the left on here, left arrow.
Firefox page tab.
And it goes to the Firefox specific settings.
Automatic enable structural navigation checkbox checked.
Enable structural navigation, that's for, you know how when you get to a form control, you have to hit something to activate it, usually enter. That's what that's for on here.
Automatic focus mode during structural navigation checkbox not checked.
Automatic focus mode, we don't want to do that. We want to have to hit a key to get into focus mode. Focus mode is where you actually act on a control, like type into it.
Automatically start speaking a page when it is first loaded, checkbox not checked.
Yeah, I find I don't like to do that. I'd rather have it render the whole thing before it tries to read it. If I said automatically speaking, it'll try to do it sometimes before it's fully loaded, and it's a mess. And it slows the whole process down.
Present summary of a page when it is first loaded, checkbox checked.
Some people like that. It tells you how many lists, how many headers, how many blah blah blah, all the different kinds of elements. And a partridge in a pear tree. I typically don't like it, because I find it kind of annoying.
Enable layout mode for content, checkbox checked.
Enable layout mode. It looks exactly like what they see on the screen, not something funky, not some weird pre-formatted or post-formatted layout.
Table navigation panel. Speak cell coordinates. Checkbox not checked.
When you're visiting tables in a web page, you can use Alt-Shift, up, down, left, right to visit the cells. This one won't read the coordinates as you move. It'll just read the contents, the way I have it set. If I change it, it reads the coordinates too. Sometimes useful, most of the time not, so.
Speak multiple cells hands. Checkbox checked. Announce cell header. Checkbox checked. Skip blank cells checkbox not checked. Find options panel. Speak results during find checkbox checked.
That's handy. You know how in Firefox you can use slash and then start typing and you search on a website, or you use apostrophe and it does links only? Well, this will show you the partial results as it matches.
Only speak change blanks during find minimum length of matched text. Help push button. Apply push or cancel push button.
I'll cancel that.
Taste. Google Mozilla Firefox rate. Search editable content. Focus mode.
The next thing I want to do is show a little game a friend of mine wrote, or a couple of friends of mine. It's called Mine Racer. I've been playing this silly thing for a long time. Basically, the idea is that you're riding a cart through a tunnel. It goes faster as you ride, and you have to jump over pits and duck under stalactites. And the object of the game is to survive as long as you can, and every game ends ultimately in death by obstacle. There's a top 10 scores list and everything. It's kind of like an old-fashioned arcade game. A couple of friends, Bill Wolf and Mike Taboda, a couple of guys I know that are big into coding, wrote this game. And you can get it on a site called 2mb.games. That's 2 Mike Bravo, if you need phonetics, or Michael and Bill. So they wrote this thing, and it's kind of fun. I'll go through it once. Too bad that speaker doesn't work better. But what we're going to do first is we're going to locate the folder in which it is. It doesn't install itself properly into the desktop, the menu system and all that, so because it's a program that people just wrote and just hand out. It's not integrated fully, but you can still get to it.
Window, Google, Mozilla, Firefox, or
so I'm going to type in Mine Racer here. I hit the super key.
Open new panel, Mineracer Linux 86-64 push button.
Now see, as I was typing, it was reading search that it found. Mineracer x86. So I'm going to hit enter and open the folder.
Recent files, Mineracer Linux 86-64 frame.
This is the file manager, but it's where all your files are visible, are shown, and their properties, and whether they're executable and all that stuff, and where you can rename, move, delete, paste, the usual things you'd expect to be able to do in a file manager. So I'm going to
start, favorite files. Recent files.
I'm going to just go to the right one and get out of this side pane, which, by the way, if you don't like side panes, you can shut it off in the preferences.
Content view panel, icon view.
Now here's the icon view, which would be familiar. It's a grid.
Very much like OSX.
Yeah. Yeah, you got a grid here. You have
link folder, sounds folder.
Lib sounds.
Credits.txt plain text document.
Credits.txt.
Emma.log plain text document.
Everything open source, as it seems, has a credits or history.txt type file in it. People talk about, you know, attribute it to each other or to themselves. And also sometimes they give a history of changes made and people who contributed and.
Manual.txt plain text document.
This is the manual, but we're going to do it the more fun
notification
way.
Notification printer added Canon underscore MF220.
Oh, a printer just got added to the network. Isn't that
notification
special?
Notification printer added HP underscore Canon underscore NIC.
A bunch of printers are getting added to this network.
Yeah,
printers. Open.
Mineracer executable.
Here's the Mineracer executable. That's the game. It says Mineracer because it's one word, and it's all lowercase. If it was uppercase M, uppercase R, it would say Mineracer because of how I have Orca set up. So we're going to hit Enter.
Use your arrow keys to navigate the menu and enter to select play game. Notification printer added HP underscore color underscore laser jet underscore pro underscore M252BW underscore 5P8F50I underscore.
Okay, that's the music for the game, which I don't know if you guys can hear it across the room.
View instructions.
But here's view instructions.
Learn game sounds.
Learn game sounds. That's how we're going to do it. We hit enter
use
on that.
Use your arrow keys to navigate the menu and enter to play the sound. Pressing space while the sound is playing will stop it. Stalactite.
Oh, here's what it sounds like when you're a stalactite's coming up. I'm going to hit enter on it. Very good. That's a stalactite.
Safe to jump.
Safe to jump is one. You get a little beep when it's safe to jump over a pit. And by the way, when you've unlocked that level, those beeps go away.
Unpaused.
Now, unpaused, you can pause this game with the enter key while you're playing. Here's the sound you get when you resume it.
Land.
And here's the sound when you land, when you made a jump.
Pit jump bonus.
Here's when you get a pit jump bonus.
Pit jump bonus.
Double points.
Double points. That's when you unlock a level of points.
Point.
Here's when you get some cash. Or that's when you actually hear that there's cash coming.
Get point.
Here's the sound when you actually pick it up.
Paused.
And here's the paused sound. It's basically that same sound backwards. Paused and unpaused.
Death by stalactite.
It is death by stalactite.
Pit.
And here's what happens when you land in a pit. Or that's when a pit is approaching. That's when you're approaching a pit. I'm going to stop that because it's...
Jump.
Here's the sound when you jump.
Stalactite bonus.
Here's a stalactite bonus.
Stalactite bonus.
By the way, you get a bonus if you get as close as you possibly can without being too late.
Duck.
Here's when you duck a stalactite.
Cart.
Here's the cart itself going down the track.
Jump beeps disabled.
Here's jump beeps. Disabled. Jump beeps disabled.
Jump beeps disabled.
This is all self-voicing.
Death by bit.
You don't even need to have a screen reader to play this. It's self-voicing. That's death by pit.
Back to main menu.
Back to main menu.
Use your arrow keys to navigate the menu and enter to select play game.
Yeah, that's Jonathan Duddington. It's probably modeled after his voice. I've never heard him myself, but...
You intro play game.
I could change that too if I wanted, but I actually like it. There's an English US... There's a whole bunch of languages actually in here. Yep, so now we're going to play. I'm going to hit enter. That might be Storm Dragon himself playing. I don't know. And here we go. There goes the cart. We started out. Long straightaway to start. It's not always that way. It's all random, so you never know. It's 2mb.games. And here comes a pit. Jump. Okay. And anyone tell me what's coming up? Oh,
you hit the beep.
It was both, and a stalactite. It was cash and a pit, almost on top, right beside each other. There's no winning. There's death, no matter how you play. It's a matter of how long can you keep going.
Do you get additional points? If you go
yes, you do.
The
goal is just to survive as long as you can. Just beat your top 10 scores. So there isn't really a win. There's a how long can you survive? Whoever does it the longest has the top score. Up arrow for jumping and collecting cash. Up arrow again for jump. More cash. Oh,
That was Stalactite, huh?
What was that, guy?
Stalactite?
Yeah.
The way through your skull?
Huh?
Was it way through your skull?
You made it to position 2 on the time scoreboard.
Well, I'll show you right now. I actually cleaned out all the settings before I came, so that's why that's the position 2 score. Because I cleaned it out. I wanted to start with a clean slate. So here's what it shows you now. I'll show you the results of the game. I move up and down. I move down to do this. I'll move one increment.
Your total time was 1 minute and 45 seconds. You scored 58,528 points.
Okay, go down next.
You jumped 4 bits. You ducked 2 stalactites. You collected 38 points. Your adventure ended as a bloody smear on the side of a stalactite.
Okay, that's the answer.
Yep.
Bloody smear.
I'm making cave art, guys. I'm becoming cave art in the walls here.
So is this game pretty addictive, David?
Oh, I'll say. It is. I don't know how many scores I racked up before I cleaned it out for you guys. I wish I hadn't now because they're better and more impressive. I usually play it with phones on. So that's Mine Racer. Anybody want to come up and try it?
David, are there other games that you play with the Linux?
Well, there are a few, but not too many. I use a site called Quentin C's Playroom for card games. Quentin, it's actually qcsalon.net. qcsalon, S-A-L-O-N, .net. But it's been around a while. It's called the Playroom. Anybody can do it. It's very accessible by web browser. Or that you can, for Windows or OS X, or I think the telephones, I forget, you can get a client for it. And there's another one called RS Games, which some of you also might have heard of. I think that's rsgames.org. And that one, too, has clients for various platforms. It's a social gaming site. They've got card games and board games. They've got an Imperial System adaptation of Neil Born called 1,000 Miles, for example. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's a card game where you're driving in a road race, and your players get to throw various obstacles at you and things. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, I'm between computers, it seems like, so at the moment I haven't done Linux much in a while. I'm getting tired of this. Yeah, I was listening to your game and doing physical therapy at the same time.
By the way, Mine Racer is not online. It just runs in the window.
Is there any type of like online community where people brag about their scores? And
well, a little bit. Yeah. We see it on Twitter sometimes, although I've contributed more of those than anybody else lately. There's some VoIP that you can use in Linux that I like. There's a TeamTalk client that works in Ubuntu, but not in other distros. There's also a free as in freedom and free to use and et cetera, a communal voice chat thing called Mumble.
Available for using Zoom with Linux? Because I tried to do it and it didn't work.
It works in Fedora.
Oh yeah? The same trees as the Windows guys? I was using Debian and...
I think Debian, I don't know, it's supposed to work in Ubuntu, but I don't know about Debian.
Zoom even? I know you mentioned TeamTalk. I couldn't get that installed, but
Zoom?
I thought. I did get to listen, but to try to unmute myself I couldn't do it.
Oh, I was able to do it briefly. I forget how now, but I figured it's better to just come to the meetings.
I almost did.
Yeah, there's a voice chat thing called Mumble that a few of us use, where it's communal. It was designed to it was designed for gamers to use, but I mean anyone can. It's just communal voice chat. There's a client for Mumble for Windows and OS X and iPhone and Android and all them.
Is there a Skype client for Linux?
Not anymore. I think there will be when the business with Chrome and accessibility in Linux is ironed out more, but it's really not something I would use anyway because I'm more into, whenever possible, I'd rather use things that are free licensed and Skype is not. That's a preference of mine more than anyone else's. It's there. It's just, you know, some of the distros won't carry it for that reason, in which case you might have to build it or get it from some other place. Which isn't always an option. You can always build something from sources if you can get a hold of it.
How have you used LibreOffice at all, David, and how do you...
Just a little bit. I don't use it. I don't really put it through its paces a lot like a college student or something would, but it's got, you know, a lot of the keystrokes are the same as in Microsoft Office. It reads and creates various forms of Microsoft Word, Excel, and PowerPoint
files.
Do you
have it installed on this? Yeah.
It's here, yeah.
Can you pop it open? Is it okay if we look at it?
Yeah, we can.
I find it quirky. I find it really quirky. Trying to save the files and finding things. The way I save files, for example, if I wanted to try to save a Word file for something, I would have to create a file with a Docker extension that would look a lot like a Word file. If I wanted to create a text, I had to do something else, it seemed to me. And I thought it would have the choices in a menu, but I didn't. I've had trouble using it, so I haven't used it very often.
I would only use it if I needed the extensive formatting, or I needed to share a word. If it's just for me, I'll just use plain text files with the editor called Jedit in GNOME, which is a basic like Notepad type editor.
Yeah.
So here.
Well, I like the command line anyway, but still, I do use that a lot.
If I really wanted to do that, I would, you know, if I had serious formatting to do, I would probably have a much easier time running Emacs and using LaTeX, which is a free typesetting and formatting macro system that's way beyond the scope of this meeting.
Yeah.
And a lot of meetings, because it would take a workshop to teach you how to use it. There is that. That's one of the things that people find daunting at times, is that things aren't always as easy to use as you might be used to. If something is simple, it's often harder to use, if that makes sense, because like the GUI hides a lot of complexity, and if you, you know. So anyway, we'll bring up LibreOffice if you want. I'll just type the word write, and I'll hit the Windows key.
Window.
And I'll type the word write.
W-R-R-I-D. LibreOffice writable shorter.
And LibreOffice writer was the first thing to come up, which is the word processor. And let's see what else came up.
Text editable shorter.
I go to the right, the text editor also comes up.
LibreOffice writable shorter.
And I go back to the left, LibreOffice writer. And we hit enter on it. Or I could have just gone another way. I could have used the run box and typed the command L-O writer, but I wanted to show you this GNOME desktop fanciness. So yeah, we hit enter.
Now, does it open up in a blank document? Or
it will in this case, yeah.
Yeah.
Untitled one, LibreOffice writer.
There's an untitled Word document.
Is that Libre like
L-I-B-R-E? It's L-I-B-R-E, Libre, free. And its native format is something called Open Document, which I believe the Microsoft Office products also support now, after much resisting and hand-wringing.
So type in some text, David, and then just let's see if we can save it as something or whatever.
All right, we can certainly do that. And I'll misspell something, you can hear what that does.
Taste misspelled. Taste H E D D A D Taste L L Q I Z K T E R O double N T F O X comma dot 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 Taste blank.
So there's a couple of lines. And what do you want to do? I can show you the some of the attributes of the text.
So how do you do? How would you do in like a read all? What's the read all command? Is there a read all command in?
It's caps lock semicolon. Is the say all command. I'm in the desktop mode. If I were using laptop mode, it would be keypad insert plus enter, I think, plus keypad enter.
Now, why do you have desktop mode set up as opposed to laptop, since you're using a laptop?
No, I have laptop mode. I was saying what it would be in desktop mode.
Okay.
No, I even on a desktop, I much prefer laptop mode.
Okay.
I'd rather not take my hands off home row.
Say all.
Do it. Yeah. Say all. I'll go to the top with control home. And I will use Orca key semicolon. I could do all that standard stuff, you know. I could do Control A to select all. I could do, you know, Shift down arrow to select a line at a time.
So if you want to save this on a different format, you just do Alt, like in a file menu, or how do
I could do? Well, I can show you. I'll do Alt F.
F file menu. New menu.
New would be what kind of stuff do I want to save. We could take a right here and see what that is, but we don't know. I'll go save.
Open dot 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 control plus O.
Open dot 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 dot. That's pretty typical layout and notation. That's a dialogue.
Open remote dot dot dot.
Open remote. You could open a file on another machine. That's kind of cool. It might work for the Google document. I'm not sure.
Recent documents menu.
Recent documents.
Close.
Close.
Wizards menu.
Wizards.
Templates menu.
Templates.
Save control plus S.
Save control S, but I never gave it a name, so we're going to go save as.
Save remote dot dot dot.
Save remote. Again, I could work on something that's on another machine, on the network.
Save as dot 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 shift plus control plus S.
And there, it tells you how to do it. Save as. Shift control S, just like you're used to. Most likely.
Next save file chooser. Name text. Untitled one selected.
Well, we're going to change that. We're going to give it some useful name. QBF.
Q. Selection delete E. F.
QBF.
Cancel push button.
And I'm going to shift tab.
Toggle button not print. Save with password checkbox. Encrypt with GPG key checkbox.
Save with a password. I can encrypt it with a key if I had one.
It's QBF. Is that
Quick Brown Fox. It's a file name. I just gave it a... It's not an extension.
Files. Table with 0 rows, 3 columns. Name table column header. Create folder. Toggle button not pressed. Documents, double button press.
Now, documents is where this would land until unless I were to move it, and documents is empty for this user because I did a clean sweep. My actual stuff is stored elsewhere for purposes of this.
Dave, double button not pressed.
And Dave is the directory above documents. That's my home folder.
Up path push button.
I could go up path.
List with items, documents.
Documents, that's the recent folders. If I could go documents, downloads, pictures, videos, music, all that kind of stuff.
Desktop. Home.
Home.
Same push button. Double button not pressed. Name text. QBF selected. Double button not pressed. Space. Press. Search text. Blank.
Now there's a search box. Or
push button.
Also.
Date, double button. Documents. Double button. Create folder. Files. Encrypt. Save with password.
I'm going to the right
button.
Here.
Cancel push button. Name text. Double button. Save push button. List with add items. Document. Downloads. Music. Bit. Other location. But path push button. Date, double button. Documents. Double create folder. Files. Encrypt. Save with password. Double button. Cancel put. Name text. QBF. Double button not pressed. Save push button. Space.
Okay,
save.
Okay, that's saved automatically as a .odt, which is a text file. And it's in my file, it's in my folder called documents, which is inside my home folder. So the path would be /home/dave/documents with a capital D.
Like if I had a, will a Windows machine read .odt files, or would I have...
If you have a new enough, if you have a new enough Microsoft Office, I think it will.
Mm-hmm.
Open document text. Then we can do the same thing with a spreadsheet if I type the word calc.
Window.
And we do C A L C. We'll get a few things. We'll get
GNOME calculator, push button.
GNOME calculator, which is the desktop calculator where you're banging an expression and you get an answer. And you can have
very. Is that a text-based calculator?
Yep. Yeah, it's text-based.
That's cool.
It's also, you could do it the other way too. You can hit the buttons the other way with the. Yeah, Orca, in fact, reads them if you move around, but I would just. You can also just bang a text algebraic expression in the thing.
Speed crunch push button.
Speed crunch? I'm not even sure what that does.
Mate calculator push button.
Mate calculator.
Quintal push button. Tawan in voice calc. Bing push button. Google push button. Google C slash.
There's various calculators.
Speed crunch. No calc. Calculator push button. LibreOffice calc push button.
LibreOffice calc is the first one because that's the one I use most. It comes up first because it's frequent. There's different history type settings in this GNOME desktop where. You can show all applications, which I'll do in a minute. Or you can show frequent, would just be the ones that are used most often. Or, and here's, okay, calc. Now, LibreOffice takes a bit to open, even on this very fast machine.
Untitled one, LibreOffice calc frame.
And it's the usual, you know, you got, go across.
Sheet one, table with blank C1, blank D1, blank E1, blank D, blank, blank B.
This is Linux's version of Excel, basically.
Yeah, this is a spreadsheet. It does all the things that Excel does. And LibreOffice isn't unique to Linux. You could run LibreOffice in Windows if you wanted. There's no reason you couldn't. Go to LibreOffice.org and get the Windows build.
Now, can you save these files as regular Excel files so that somebody who's not running Office or LibreOffice would be able to...
Again, ODS.
ODS.
You could save as a couple of different XLSs, I think. Or you could save as something totally universal, like a CSV, various delimited types various types of delimited values, and you can do all that kind of stuff. You can do the usual calculations. If you put something in and you go over it, it says has formula, and then you can use Orca A to read the formula. So you got all that. You know, you got the usual of operations.
If you wanted to do audio editing, would you use something like
Audacity? I could use Audacity, which might or might not be on here. I forget. This is a clean install. I forget whether I put Audacity in. We can look quickly enough. If I did, we can install it. It takes a minute. Let's do a search right now for Audacity.
Window. Audacious push button.
Audacious is a music player. People might be familiar with that. It's been around for ages. No, I put that in.
Audacity push button.
It is here. Audacity is here.
Oh, wow, okay.
But if it weren't here, I could install it very easily by two methods. One, I could find it in this list and I could go to the GNOME Software Center and find it. Or it's called Ubuntu Software. They put their brand stickers on it. I could search and browse for it kind of like you would do in an app store. Or my preferred way to do it is to open a terminal and use APT, which is the App Advanced Package Tools, and say install Audacity, and it would put it in. But the other method is good if you'd like. Suppose you wanted to look and say, okay, what do they have for ham radio apps, for example? Well, we can check that. So we'll open the Software Center. Well, we'll just do it this way. We'll just do ham radio. I did ham radio in the spotlight box again, the search box. And we have?
Grig push button.
Grig? I don't know what it is.
Compty push button.
Compty?
Comptext push button.
Comptext?
CQR log push button.
CQR log?
Ebook to CW push button.
Ebook to CW? That's humorous.
Bing push button.
Bing? I'm not sure why it goes to Bing.
Google push button.
Bing and Google.
Bing push ebook.
I guess if I use, if I wanted to, I could do the search for the word ham radio by Bing or Google. And then there's my favorite that's already in here. Chirp, I already put it in. So here you can see they have all these ham radio applications in the repository for Ubuntu. And I found that just by typing the string ham radio into the search box. These are all applications that have to do with ham radio that are available in the Ubuntu repository. It's an analog to the App Store, but you don't pay anything.
Is Ubuntu, is that, at this point, would you say the most accessible version of Linux?
Probably out of the box it is, yeah. Because, you know, you basically can get it up and running in a few minutes without any assistance. You just throw the live CD in a computer, boot it up, or the live, you know, I have it on this USB drive. I brought a USB with the live system on it. It handles, you know, Ubuntu handles all the various, you know, secure boot and EFI and all that jazz that are on modern machines. Without any fuss from the user. It can be tricky when you want to run Ubuntu alongside another OS, but it's possible. You can set it up that way. Like what you would do is you'd put if you put Windows in first and you would free up some space with, I don't know what tool they use these days, Partition Magic or something, and then you could put Ubuntu in alongside it and get it, and it would have an entry in the boot menu.
So it would be like a dual boot, you could either boot in Windows or boot.
You could. I don't do that, but you can.
Yeah.
Ubuntu makes that kind of stuff very easy. Other distributions don't make it as easy to do that, but it's still possible.
The question is, the couple of times I played with Ubuntu, I didn't figure out how to install it in a more complicated fashion than just having everything on one drive and mostly in one large partition, and I wanted several, and I couldn't that easily so that we...
Yep,
there's and just having like my home partition on a different drive than I have the root, stuff like that.
You can do that. You can do that. It's harder for us, but you can. There's a button called something. It's called something else in parentheses manual. And from that, you can tell it how to partition all your devices, where /home is supposed to be, where /boot wants to be, all that stuff. You can do that. But
Debian, the installed, even the Debian installer, I have trouble figuring out how to do it the way I want to do it, or say retain an existing home partition so I don't have to put everything on there again. And that's actually one of the problems. Otherwise, it's pretty easy to install using Debian itself, you know, just basic.
Yeah, you just walk through it.
So I was curious, if I go to Ubuntu, if I can do that and save my data that way.
You can even have, one of their default options is to have /home and another partition. But if you already have stuff you want to save, you go into this Ubuntu installer Ubiquiti and you say manual when it comes to the partition setup. And that lets you do for each mounted volume or for each block device it sees, you can do whatever you want with it. You could put /home on a network.
Direction Fedora and then various. But each has its different pros and cons.
Yeah, but it's of course, we're talking Ubuntu, we're talking drop it in.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to make the question for now. Yeah, that's all.
Yep, you can do it. So it's just, I know it's easier for us because it's easier for us to do it in, for example, Slackware because you can run CFdisk and all that jazz. I have Slackware on another machine. I just got it up and going. By the way, Slackware is a distribution that has, among other things, a console that talks, not just the GUI. It has a thing called eSpeakup for the native console.
So that's basically
like the old DOS prompt.
Well, kind of, but it's a lot more powerful. It's a shell prompt.
Yeah,
it's a shell prompt, but it's not a DOS box inside Windows. It's
going
back to DOS. So you can work that way. You can work both ways if your distribution is set up for it. You can have a console with a GUI in it. You can have another console with no GUI or a different one or all that stuff you can do. But we're just keeping it simple here, so Ubuntu. They do it best for keeping it easy. It's for people coming from Windows and Mac OS that want to try it or, you know. It's really geared for beginners. That doesn't mean advanced people can't do it. It's just that it gets in their way sometimes. Like Al was pointing out, the installer kind of gets in his way when he's trying to do something a little more complicated and the installer's in his way with Ubuntu. The other end of the spectrum is Arch, where nothing is done for you. And you have to know what you're doing, totally. But, you know, you'll get exactly what you want. If you do it, you'll have exactly what you want, nothing extra. That's an advantage of it. But to get to that stage, there's a lot of learning you got to do, and trial and error.
That's what I was going to ask you, David. How much learning did you have to do to get the system up and running? Obviously, you've known Linux before, but is there a lot of documentation? Is there a lot of, you know...
Well, for Ubuntu... there's a lot of documentation online. There's forums, there's Reddits, there's, you know, Ubuntu itself has a ton of documentation online. Like, there's documentation inside the system to some extent. The GNOME Foundation has a complete document on how to use GNOME with and without accessibility, although I find that changes are coming so fast to the accessibility that the documentation has kind of fallen behind.
Although I was thinking Debian is really well documented, but and Arch is too for that matter, but the quality of documents does vary. So just because there's a document doesn't necessarily mean you'll come out of it knowing what you're doing.
You know, it's community contributed documentation, and if you want proof that programmers shouldn't write, look at some of Arch's documentation. People who code should not write English. It was obviously written by developers, and so they often have a slant that sometimes they think you know things you don't. But there's plenty of, especially for Ubuntu, there's lots of total newbie documentation. To some extent, the longer a project's been around, the more mature it gets, the documentation. Like, Debian's been around over 30 years now. There's reams of stuff on it. And again, if you find something you don't like, pull a commit and clean it up, resubmit it.
David, how does it work? So let's say that you find a bug in the accessibility somewhere, so you want to resubmit this to the whole community. Is it approved, or how does it so it's not like the Wild West where people are making changes that end up screwing something up really badly, as opposed to...
Part of that is because there are so many hands and eyes on it that it won't get messed up. Everybody can audit the thing. I mean, there is some guidance. For instance, if you file a bug against Orca in the official bug tracker for Orca, which is on the GNOME's website, there are people who will look at that. You know, the Joan Marie Diggs in particular is like the chief developer and coordinator of all the efforts. And she'll look at it, and if it breaks something, she might either file a counter bug saying, no, I'm not going to take it, it's going to block something else. Or someone else will discover it and submit use cases, and they have to document a bug. It won't do to just say, there's a bug in LibreOffice support. You have to file, and oftentimes you've got to do, Orca has a debugging function where you can get all this trace output of every step Orca takes. And that's what Joni, for instance, that's what she wants when you submit a bug. She wants the relevant parts of Orca's debug.out so she can see what's going on, and so can anyone else.
If you choose to try to fix a bug, it doesn't mean they have to take it, but you can do it without breaking the licensing agreements.
Yeah.
And that's the key part of free software.
You can go in, anybody can go in, and, you know, if the commit doesn't work, it's not accepted. It's removed if it's broken. Or if it's incomplete, you know, it'd say, okay, it works as far as it goes. This is pretty good. For example, some of this went back and forth with me and a guy in France over audio support in his accessibility-focused version of Slackware that I'm running on another machine. There was all kinds of screwy problems with various sound card detection, depending on what machine you used. It was a mess. But me and two other people going back and forth with the developer off public mailing lists, in that case, were able to get a handle on it, and now it's out, you know. But Ubuntu has probably millions of people worldwide poking at it. And, like, you know, there is an official process where you commit proposed changes. You know, you make the change and you commit it, and then people, you know, it goes through some quality assurance and is accepted or not. But the thing is, everyone has access to that whole process. If you're sure it's a bug, you know, sometimes you can find yourself embarrassed and it's not really a bug, and then somebody better tell you quickly. And the same with the documentation. You know, there are people who just do documentation. There are people who just do artwork, like for front backgrounds. That's their contribution. And they submit it to the community. And people adopt it or not as they want. Now, LibreOffice is another one that's got a huge foundation behind it, the Document Foundation. There are lots of people working, squashing bugs in LibreOffice. This game, Mine Racer, is kind of an exception because, you know, this guy Billy Wolf wrote it and just kind of tossed it out on his website. The source code's not there, which is, you know, I sent him a tip in his tip jar online because I appreciate what he did. Chirp is a program that people can use to program their fancy new ham radio gear, frequency memory, channel memories, and all kinds of other settings. Because a lot of times these panels are inaccessible, and, you know, Chirp is a good way to get around that. And Chirp is free software. It's in the most strict free software guided repositories like Triskel and Debian. Chirp has been around a while, and I know before that there were a few other attempts with various... I think ICOM came out with one, you know, for some of its radios, and another brand, Kenwood, has one for their radios. But Chirp does a whole bunch of different ones, and it was done by the community of hams who program, basically. I see parallels sometimes between the ham radio and free software type communities, at least the makers in ham radio community, you know, people that are home brewers and tinkerers and stuff.
You said you'd have to go through a process to connect the Braille display. Could you just talk about that?
I can a little, but I don't have one. In Ubuntu, Debian, and a couple of other distributions, I think Fedora, which is by the Red Hat company, there is a Braille display driver called Braille TTY in the system, and you can activate it. And when you do, when you boot up and Braille TTY is activated, there's a couple of ways you can do it. You can let the device try to detect your display and run the proper driver, or you can speed the process up by specifying on the command line that launches the driver what display you have and what translation table you want to use. I had an Orbit 20 and I played with it a little bit, and then it broke on me before I could really explore. I did borrow somebody's old BrailleSense and it worked great. And it worked great on the USB. USB, it's a no-brainer with USB. It's awesome. And perhaps Bluetooth, though I can't swear to it.
As a screen reader, you do, for someone who say wants to jump into Linux, what distribution, like Live installer, what's the preferred, like,
okay,
easiest way to get into it?
I would say the easiest way to start is to get one of the Ubuntu Live installers. Now, of the Ubuntu Live installers, they have a whole bunch. They have one with GNOME, which is the one I showed you briefly. They have another one with a desktop that looks a lot like old XP, and that's called Mate. M-A-T-E, but it's pronounced Mate. And for Earls, Ubuntu.com, U-B-U-N-T-U.com, is where you can find everything you'd ever want to know about Ubuntu, including downloads, by BitTorrent or by just straight download. I prefer BitTorrent and recommend that whenever you can, you should use it for these big files, because they're a few gigs, and that way you don't have to mess with checksums. That's Ubuntu. The strict one is GNOME, the one that is that Canonical Limited supports. And now Ubuntu-Mate, or M-A-T-E.org, is the one where you can get the Ubuntu Mate installer. It depends. What kind of desktop do people like for GUIs? I mean, do you like the old XP-style way to do things?
It's very nostalgic. Yeah.
With the menus across the top, applications,
that.
Places,
yeah,
system,
that sort of stuff, yeah.
And that sort of stuff, and the desktop with all your icons on it, and the top and bottom panel. Well, then Mate might be for you. Another good thing about Mate, it consumes way less resource than GNOME. So Mate, by the way, people are running it on Raspberry Pis.
Now, does Mate use the same screen reader as...
Yep, uses Orca.
Yeah.
All the infrastructure that makes the accessibility possible is what Orca really depends on. So any desktop that talks to the accessibility infrastructure is going to have some support in Orca. Same with applications. The desktop is actually just an application, which is not really the way people think of it so much. But in the case of, in the Linux world, the desktop is nothing more than another application. It's all sitting on the command line. By the way, there's no touchscreen support here in Orca yet. Yeah, you can run it on tablets if you have a keyboard. You can, this, like I said, this thing is a 10-inch screen ProBook. The other one is a ThinkPad with a 10-inch screen that I have, a Lenovo ThinkPad, very nice light form factor, and a battery that lasts about 5 hours instead of 12. And because it has the ThinkPad has a spinning disk in it, so it lasts a lot less, less battery life when you got a disk spinning.
Other than the fact between these two systems that are there any other major differences other than the fact that the desktop looks different in terms of...
Well, not only does it look different, it actually works differently. It consumes a lot less power. Mate is very lightweight on as a footprint that's very light. There's no search thing like I've been showing you in GNOME. You have to go down the menus, or you can always use Alt F2, which is the run command, where you can just type the name of a program if you know it. You could do Alt F2, and then you could say,
like Orca
Firefox. You could just say Firefox space Twitter.com, and it would just pop it open. And then you use Alt-Tab to switch among the things that are running. GNOME versus Mate, it's kind of like a parallel between OS X. OS X's user interface versus Windows XP's user interface.
Way back when I actually worked with QNX, and I'm assuming Linux is sort of a C-based operating system, is that...?
Especially the kernel and the shell and some of the basic utilities, yeah.
So do you still have the capability of running programs in C or C++ or something?
Sure. You could run programs in C++. You can have all the languages are supported that I'm aware. There's Go, there's Scheme, there's Common Lisp. You can even still do Fortran and Forth, and there's a GNU COBOL, all of it.
Are those compilers?
Installed?
Are they available in the...
They're in the repository if they're not on the live medium. The live medium doesn't ship every program available. If they did that, Debian would be about 20 DVDs. So they give you this, you know, Ubuntu gives you a decent set of startup programs so that you can actually start being productive. You can even compile a few things because you need to when they get updates. You don't do it personally. The script, the update handler takes care of it. But yeah, the Slackware Linux is a lot closer to that layer of things than Ubuntu is, which in some cases means things run faster because there's less overhead. All this GUI stuff I've been showing you, though, is all Python. It's all Python bytecode. It's all Python. The entire GNOME desktop, I think, is Python. Orca's all Python. The front ends for LibreOffice probably are. I know the front end for Chirp is Python. It's basically the same front end, whether you're using Windows, Mac, or Linux.
Regarding Chirp, the last I knew, at least on the Windows platform, Chirp was not very accessible at all, even with NVDA. Do you find it quite accessible in Linux?
Yeah, I do, actually. There are a few things you have to guess by context, but it's actually quite good. I think all the controls actually read, but the labeling of said controls could be better.
That's a good start.
They are actually all focusable controls. They're all in the tab index, and they're all, you know, Orca lands on them all properly. But some of the labeling is bad. So, because people wrote labels in, but they didn't use the label attribute properly, so Orca doesn't always know what's a label. I'm sure this is a problem across many platforms.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
So thank you very much, David. That was wonderful.